Some say that love's a little boy, and some say he's a bird. Some say he makes the world go round, and some say that's absurd. But when I asked the man next door, who looked as if he knew, his wife was very cross indeed and said, it wouldn't do.
Oh, Tell Me the Truth About Love by Lap Otter. As read by Finnegan. Chapter 1. I Don't Love You. I don't want to wear your clothes. Don grunted, staring at the kettle. They wouldn't fit me, and they wouldn't flatter my coloring at all. It's fine, Sherlock, John mumbled. You don't have to wear my clothes. In fact, please don't. That must be the wrong approach, Sherlock thought. I could live without you. John blinked. Okay. Are you asking me to move out? No. Sherlock opened his eyes and nudged his bare foot against John's shod one. But you could, if you wanted. I would be fine. Thanks, John said dryly. I appreciate that. Definitely the wrong approach. I spend significant portions of my time alone. John put down his newspaper. I know. I live with you, remember? Still not right. I mean, I like to have time to myself, without you. If you want me to go away, Sherlock, you can just tell me so. I don't mind. John folded his newspaper and tucked it under his arm, making his way up to his bedroom. One of them was missing the point. I'm not always thinking about you. John lifted his head, letting Sherlock's prick fall back against his belly. You're thinking about me now, right? Well, Sherlock blinked down at him. Of course. Then that's fine? Bad timing, Sherlock thought, as John sucked him back into his mouth. It was just so... Oh. I'm not in love with you, Sherlock said in the panting aftermath of his orgasm. John sighed, but he didn't leave, just pressed his face to Sherlock's hip. What makes you say that? I've been trying to tell you. Sherlock stroked a hand through John's hair, cataloging the textures of strands. I'm not always thinking about you. I don't always want to be near you. I don't want to wear your clothes. And if you left, I would not die. He paused to concentrate on what was probably the last moment John would be warm and pliant in his arms. So, if you want to leave, you can. Do you want me to leave? That's beside the point. Sherlock, John sat up to make their eyes meet. That's entirely the point. I don't want to leave, unless you want me to leave. I want you to stay, Sherlock admitted, but you should be fully informed of my lack. John shook his head. All of those things, that's not what love means, you know, Sherlock. I'm given to understand that if you have to ask, the answer is no. If you have to ask? John lifted his head. Have you been Googling how to tell if you're in love? Sherlock looked away, scowling. No. No. It was how do I know if I'm in love? And you found things like if you're always thinking about them and if you couldn't live without them. Am I right? I had to ask, Sherlock insisted. If I were in love with you, I would just know. Sherlock, John sat up, cross-legged on the bed, his thigh pressing against Sherlock's. Have you ever been in love? No. Have you? Yes. John smiled and his eyes went a little unfocused. I thought we'd be together forever. We worshipped each other. I thought she was perfect. I don't worship you, Sherlock said. You don't think I'm perfect? Good, John said firmly. Trust me, that's not a recipe for a healthy, long-lasting relationship. Maybe you noticed, but I'm not with Mary anymore. He smiled, resting a hand on Sherlock's belly. I'm with you. Are you in love with me? Sherlock asked, alarmed. John's smile went a little sad. Would that be so bad? If I can't love you, yes, that's not... It wouldn't work. John sighed and closed his eyes, fingers stroking gently over the soft skin of Sherlock's stomach. It's just a feeling, he said finally. Like any other feeling. No one can tell you if you feel it, and it's not always easy to know what it is, and it's a choice, a bit, too. I mean, you can't just decide to fall in love out of nothing, but at some point you say to yourself, this person's smile makes the whole world better. My life would be emptier without this person. I would forgive a lot to keep this person in my life. I care about whether this person is hurt. I want this person to be happy. John shrugged. And you decide, this means love. This time, this is what it means to be in love. Sherlock sat up, shifting so his knees pressed against John's. When did you decide? I decided that I love you after Baskerville, I suppose. John's fingers resumed their restless stroking over Sherlock's skin. I decided you love me the day you came home. Sherlock frowned. You punched me. Yeah, I did, and I'm not sorry either. You deserved it. But, he shrugged. Then I thought about it. I thought about the way you treated Mrs. Hudson when those Americans came and harassed her. It was obvious, then, that you love her. And if it were just her being threatened, you'd have done the same thing, wouldn't you? Well, yes. John nodded. But you'd have done one thing differently. What's that? John made a point of catching Sherlock's eye. You would have taken me with you. Everything you did, the way you did it to keep me safe. Sherlock frowned. How can you be so sure? John smiled, leaning in to kiss the frown off of Sherlock's lips. John kissed him until his mouth was soft, until he was kissing back, until his hands came to rest on John's ribcage. I'm sure, John said, and it's okay. You don't have to be.
Does it look like a pair of pajamas or the ham in a temperance hotel? Does its odor remind one of llamas or has it a comforting smell? Is it prickly to touch like a hedge? Or soft as eiderdown fluff? Is it sharp or quite smooth at the edges? Oh, tell me the truth about love.
Chapter 2. Will it alter my life altogether? John was right. Sherlock wasn't sure. He didn't know how to be sure. But John was sure, and he was easy about it. He seemed content with the conversation as it stood, tucking Sherlock down beside him. Just lie here with me for a while, he mumbled, snuggling an arm around Sherlock's chest. I want to fall asleep with you. Sherlock consented, despite the sticky layer of sweat that had built between them and left chills whenever John shifted. One thing about love, it was supposed to make such messy, uncomfortable things into a kind of joy, wasn't it? Or was it that people forgot, in thinking about love, that material things like sweat existed? If love made cooling sweat less disgusting, then Sherlock was definitely not in love. But, well, he was still here, wasn't he? Warm and sleep-soft John pressed into his side, skin against skin. I will forgive a lot to keep this person in my life, John had said, and I want this person to be happy. Something kept Sherlock in this bed. Something made him endure the sticky chill. Something. Was it really as simple as choosing to name it? When he was sure John was deeply asleep, Sherlock got up and scouted the floor for a t-shirt and pajamas. Thus barricaded against chilly sweat, he slipped back into bed and curled himself around John. Touching was a thousand times more pleasant this way. His hands were free to roam over all of John's naked skin, and John shifted and sighed under his touch without waking. John was a soldier, able to wake at the slightest hint of danger in his surroundings, but he stayed asleep for this. He seemed smaller in sleep, denser. His breath seemed warmer. Sherlock pressed his face into John's nape and closed his eyes. He slept more often since they'd begun this thing between them, this relationship. The extra hours of sleep seemed a fair price to pay for the chance to spend those hours with John. Sherlock came awake to a kiss, a hand in his hair. He kissed back because John's morning breath was not as bad as kissing was good. John hummed in contentment as they parted. Tea, love? He offered. Or coffee? I think it might be a coffee day. The either? Sherlock said, too surprised to decide. John hadn't been lying then, or exaggerating his feelings. He was clearly long comfortable with them. He must have been waiting for Sherlock to be ready to hear it. Sherlock didn't feel ready, but it was too late now. And anyway, it was nice. It kept happening all morning. John dropped the word into their conversation easily and naturally, as if he'd always done. He said it with no expectation, no disappointment when Sherlock didn't respond in kind. "Going to the shops," John said, taking his coat off the hook. "Want anything?" "No." "Okay. Love you. Try not to blow anything up while I'm out." He didn't even wait for Sherlock to say goodbye, to say it back. If he'd been wanting a response, he'd have waited, but he just clattered down the steps and out. Sherlock could hear him whistling to himself before the street door shut. He spent the time while John was out performing an intellectual exercise. "I live alone," he thought, standing in the center of the sitting room. "John's had enough of me. He's left. He isn't coming back. What would change? John's things would all be gone. Well, that would hardly make a difference. All the mess and clutter were Sherlock's." Sherlock scanned the room, identifying everything that would vanish with John and erasing it from his mental picture. The gaps left behind were small. John's mug, absent from the coffee table. His laptop missing from the desk. A number of scattered paperbacks gone. John always had several novels lying around the flat, his only untidiness. The peg by the door was already empty of John's coat and shoes. The gaps were small, but they drew Sherlock's attention. The space John occupied, even in absence, had become part of the flat, and once emptied of John's things, the entire flat felt off. Too still, and too quiet. Sherlock shook his head, rearranged his own things to fill the space, expanding his chaos to fill the room. His own books on the shelves, his notes taking over John's side of the desk, his mug on the coffee table in place of John's. It was still too empty. Sherlock went into the kitchen and looked around. There weren't a lot of John's things here, but there were unmistakable signs of his presence. Labels on harmful chemicals. A note on the sugar bowl that read, "Actually sugar," in John's handwriting. Sherlock opened the fridge and found milk and cheese and veg, yogurt and eggs and butter. Bacon in the deli drawer, with a note in Sherlock's handwriting, "Actually bacon." The experiments were on the bottom shelf, in airtight containers, and clearly labeled. Sherlock shut the fridge and leaned his head against the cool surface, restructuring its contents. If the milk was there, it would be off. More likely, the entire fridge would be full of body parts in whatever containers, airtight or not, Sherlock could find for them. It would be freedom. To eat only what and when he wanted and no more. To ignore born cases. To blow up or contaminate whatever he wanted. John's room was worse. Everything in here was John's, from the sharp hospital corners on the bedspread to the photos on the dresser. Sherlock sank onto the edge of the bed, slowly stripping the room, taking away John's clothes and John's hamper and John's ID tags and... oh. He closed his eyes, breathed deep. Stripped away the scents of John's shampoo, his soap, his shaving cream, his sweat and shed skin. He stroked his hand over the bed, feeling not the thick, warm duvet, but the bare mattress underneath. Sherlock blinked his eyes open and stared around the bare little room, abandoned furniture looming like monuments. Maybe he could make an office of it, or a small laboratory, but... no. No, he wouldn't spend any time here. The emptiness of it sucked at him, drained him hollow. He could fill it and fill it with his files and experiments, and it would still be empty without John. It was not intolerable, he had to admit. As he told John, he would survive alone. He shut his eyes again and shook his head, breathed in the real and living smell of John that permeated the air, made himself see the room as it really was. John's things, John's presence, John's life surrounded him. His hand rested on the blankets. Sherlock went downstairs again to find something to blow up, to banish the silence. Sherlock went to the bottom of the steps when he heard the street door open, taking one of the grocery bags from John. John grinned at him, and Sherlock stared back, waiting for him to go upstairs so that Sherlock could follow. Sherlock dropped his bag onto the kitchen table and dropped himself, artfully sideways, onto a kitchen chair. John chattered through his silence, a warm note of affection underlying his voice, even as he described the dilemma he'd faced in choosing which biscuits to buy. Ordinary minds. And I couldn't decide, so I got them both, John finished. Not that you care anyway, do you, love? What if you decide wrong? Sherlock asked. John looked at him over his package of biscuits. Then you eat the wrong biscuits for a few days, and then you go back and get the right ones? Sherlock glared. Don't be thick, John. You know what I mean. I suppose I do. John put the biscuits away in the cupboard and sat down next to Sherlock, turning the chair to face him. I don't know that I believe you can decide wrong. You might change your mind, or decide that love isn't worth staying with someone for other reasons. And that's awful when it happens. But I don't think you can really be wrong once you decide that you love someone. Sherlock frowned. And that's a risk you took. John grinned at him, uncomplicatedly happy, twining his ankles around Sherlock's. That's a risk I take all the time. It's a risk everybody takes when they fall in love. But a relationship never has a happy ending. They all end in breakup or death. I don't worry about the end, because I have right now, with you. That seemed like the sort of thing that deserved a kiss. More than that, it made Sherlock want to kiss him, even though the idea didn't usually occur. It was jerky and awkward. Nothing at all like the smooth, slow kisses that came before sex, or the rough, needy ones that happened during. It was more like their first kiss. A dry, closed mouth, press of lips, imperfectly placed, and a little too hard for comfort. But John was smiling when they pulled apart, and Sherlock smiled back. What sort of things, Sherlock asked later, his violin in his lap, make love not worth it? John shrugged. It's hard to say. I know it happens, though I've never been there myself. I guess things like basic incompatibilities. Say, one person has a kink the other can't indulge. Or one person wants to have a lot more sex than the other. I mean, any number of things, really. Fights that never get resolved. Little irritations that get under the skin and just grow and grow until there's nothing left. all sex-related examples, but with John's history, they would be. Sherlock could extrapolate. He closed his eyes and exhaled. Like experiments in the fridge, violin at 3 a.m, day-long silences, refusing to... Sherlock, stop that. Sherlock reined himself in with an effort. He irritated John enough, and he didn't want him to leave. He heard John get up, and a moment later his violin was being tugged out of his hands. He let it go reluctantly, heard it settle gently into its case. Then John's knees on either side of his thighs, John's weight settling into his lap, John's hands on either side of his face. Sherlock, love. Coaxing. Sherlock looked up at John. John looked back at him, steady, unwavering. Warm and heavy, and in Sherlock's lap. Sherlock thought he ought to be able to deduce something from that. Trust me when I say that if I had a problem with our relationship, you would know. We would work on it together. We would find a solution that satisfied us both, because I refuse to give up on you. And I refuse to give up on this. John smiled and added, And the last 4 times you played violin at 3 a.m, it was to help me sleep. Not exactly something I can find irritating. He leaned down and kissed Sherlock, and Sherlock let him. Kissed back, put his hands on John's hips, and pulled him in close. Affection, possession, desire, love? Something, certainly. Something that contained affection and possession and desire, and yet wasn't any of those things. Something aching and desperate and overjoyed. John drew back slowly, with a last soft wet press of lips, smiling. His cheeks were stained pink, his pupils dilated. Getting late, he said. You sleeping tonight? I slept last night. Sherlock slid his hands around to cup John's arse and squeeze. He knew just how John would arch into the touch, just the way his legs would shift further apart. It should have been boring by now. There was nothing new to learn here, nothing in the way that John sighed and pressed down against his fingers as they crept inward between his legs. That's not a no. Sherlock hummed in agreement and traced his fingers up and down. He couldn't feel much through John's jeans, but he could feel enough. The swell of his balls, the flat of his perineum, the cleft of his arse. I like this. Me too. John leaned forward, braced his hands on the back of the chair. Sherlock leaned in to breathe the air from the skin of John's neck, the air from just inside his collar. I like you warm like this. I like you relaxed and happy. I like to make you happy. John's weight shifted, and then John's fingers were combing into his hair. You make me happy a lot. Is that part of love, then? Sherlock took his elbow to bring one hand between them, pressing a hand over John's crotch. His penis was angled down, straining against the denim. Sherlock opened John's fly and reached in to adjust it to a more comfortable position. You love what makes you happy. John sighed into the contact, but made no protest when Sherlock moved his hand back to his arse instead. A good curry makes me happy, he murmured, but I'm hardly going to move in with it and let it shag me in a chair. Sherlock grinned, pressed his face into John's skin. I might not want to shank you in this chair. Might not, John agreed. But I'd let you. Sherlock wrapped his arms around John's waist and squeezed hard, pressing John as tight against himself as he could. You make me happy, he hissed into John's collar, low and intense. I didn't know how to be before you. John squeezed back. That means a lot to me. You know, all of this. You don't need to. Don't need to what? Sherlock mumbled into John's neck. If you're trying to convince yourself you love me, you don't need to. You shouldn't, actually. That never ends well. I don't need to hear it from you. I'm not trying to convince myself. I want to know. I'm trying to find out. All right. John bent his head. Sherlock could feel the flex in his neck and pressed a kiss into Sherlock's curls. If you're happy, that's what matters to me. Sherlock relaxed, let go of the crushing grip he had on John and sat back into the chair. He slid his hands around again, down the back of John's jeans, feeling out the shape and the give he already knew so well. Sherlock, John sighed. Come to bed. No. Sherlock moved his hands in further, pressing his fingers between John's cheeks and squeezing. I want you here like this. I want you to ride me in this chair. Oh, John said, and then, yes, with our clothes on? Yes. I'll make you ride me till your legs are shaking, till you're sweaty and exhausted and can't move, your trousers hitched down just far enough. I'll leave your cock trapped inside, and then I'll make you come in your pants. You'll be filthy and shaking and sweaty for me, and then I'll fuck you properly, and you'll be lovely and limp and overstimulated. You'll make just the most gorgeous noises. I'll be slow. I'll be so slow, and you'll get hard again, and you'll come with your hand in your own sticky mess while I fuck you. Yes, John whined, grinding his ass against Sherlock's fingers, and you'll come inside me, and then stay there. Stay there till you go soft and slip out, and then I'll leak all over your trousers, and they'll be ruined. Sherlock, please. Go, Sherlock said. Go get the lube. And then come back here and ruin my trousers. This was supposed to be the dominating position, wasn't it? Himself inside John, that was meant to be power, meant to be control. It wasn't. With John on top of him, facing away, leaning back against his chest, he was powerless. Pinned into the chair, immobile as John took his own pleasure. He reached around and stroked through John's jumper and shirt and vest for John's nipple, finding it not by touch, but by memory. John whined and ground down, pulling Sherlock deeper inside him. It was always like this. Whether Sherlock was on top or underneath or beside, whether penetrating or being penetrated, or when no penetration was happening at all, John got under Sherlock's skin. Into his nerves, crawled up into his brain and became the only thing there. Everything was for John, every grasp of Sherlock's hand and rock of his hips. Sherlock's pleasure was a side effect, something that went towards allowing John to become his most uninhibited self, pleasure greedy, unashamed. Sherlock stroked a hand up John's throat, feeling the whimper the slight pressure caused. John liked an edge of danger, even in this. His hands clenched where they were braced on the chair's arms, his hips moved faster. So Sherlock pressed, gently pinning John back against his chest. Not enough to hurt, not enough to damage, not enough to inhibit the airflow, just enough for John to feel it, enough that his breath came faster, enough that he felt as though his airflow were limited. Sherlock, John gasped, voice hoarse and vibrating against Sherlock's palm. Sherlock, please, I can't anymore. And his legs gave out. Sherlock let go of John's throat and put both hands on his hips, driving up into him. John's trousers were in the way. Sherlock couldn't get very deep, but that meant his head was driving against John's prostate with every thrust. John was limp, moaning. Sherlock had to hold his hips in position. John, he growled, touch yourself. Come for me. John shoved his trousers further down his thighs, trapping his knees together and freeing Sherlock to fuck deeper into him. His cock sprang free and Sherlock leaned up to dig his teeth into John's shoulder. John came with a cry, squeezing Sherlock's cock. Sherlock groaned and bit down harder, doing his best not to come. When John had come down from his high, he wriggled a bit and whispered, "Fuck me." Can't, Sherlock mumbled, releasing his bite and kissing the wounded place. Too close. Promised you a second. Sherlock? Fuck me, John insisted. I want to feel you come. So Sherlock did, only now sparing a thought for his own pleasure. It didn't take long, with John still trembling and making soft, overstimulated noises above him. John began to giggle shortly afterwards. The resulting clench of his arse sent a shudder of sensation through Sherlock, who caught his breath and then joined in the laughter. "We're ridiculous," John managed. "You wanted to ruin my trousers," Sherlock pointed out. He wasn't quite soft yet, but their movement had dislodged him anyway. He felt a gush of warm fluid follow, semen and lube. "There. They're ruined." John giggled harder, and Sherlock pulled him close and squeezed him tight. Yes, he was happy. This, John, made him happy. "Okay," John said finally. "I'm sore, and we're both filthy. Let's go have a shower and sleep, yeah?" Maybe, Sherlock said, putting a hand under John to help him sit upright. It was a bit of a relief to be able to breathe again without John's weight in the way, but it was also a bit of a disappointment. They shed their clothes on the way to the bathroom, John tossing them toward the bedroom to deal with later, Sherlock dropping them where he stood for John to deal with later. The shower was a bit too small, but they squeezed in. Soap and hands got everywhere, and it took twice as long as it should have to clean themselves. And when they stepped out, dripping onto the tile floor, Sherlock looked down at John, who was looking back, and grinning, and couldn't hold in a laugh. Granted, he hadn't tried very hard. He leaned down and rested his forehead on John's, and John asked, "What's funny?" "Nothing," Sherlock said, pulling John in close, their wet bodies slick against each other. "I'm just having fun. Easy fun. Uncomplicated happiness." They fought over the towel, even though there was a second one hanging within arm's reach. Neither of them got dry, really, but they both got tickled and knocked over at least once, and John teased Sherlock for his mussed, fluffy hair. Bed. And more close-skin, naked cuddling. Fresh, washed skin had a different texture. Sherlock put his hands all over John, feeling the textures of smooth belly versus roughened scar versus velvet foreskin versus wrinkled scrotum, not to catalog the differences, as you had all of John's textures memorized already, just to feel them, just to have the sensation of John shimmering over his nerves into his brain. Contact for its own sake. Touch for no reason than to feel. Data meant to be experienced and not mercilessly catalogued, examined, deduced from. It was all new. It was all John. He slept. He woke up shivering in the middle of the night, got out of bed to put on pajamas. John stirred and mumbled, "What's the matter, love?" "Nothing. I'm coming back." "Go back to sleep, John." John rolled over and went back to sleep. Sherlock slid back under the blankets and pressed snug against John's warmth, shivering the chill away. His cheeks ached with all the day's smiling. If he was sure of nothing else, Sherlock was sure of this. John loved him, and he was happy.
The history books refer to it in cryptic little notes, and it's a common topic on the transatlantic boats. I found the subject mentioned in accounts of suicide. I've even seen it scribbled on the backs of railway guides. Does it howl like a hungry Alsatian, or boom like a military band? Could one give a first-class imitation on a Saar or a Steinway brand? Is it singing at parties or riot? Does it only like classical stuff? Will it stop when one wants to be quiet? Oh, tell me the truth about love.
Chapter 3. Will It Come Without Warning? It crept up on him slowly. The first time it happened was after a chase. The suspect had been armed with a knife, something that Sherlock had, foolishly he would admit if only to himself, not expected of her. She'd attacked John, which had been a mistake. John caught her by her knife wrist, spun her round, and pinned her to the alley wall, her hand pressed between her shoulder blades. The sheer competency of it arrested Sherlock's attention, as John's competencies always did. The knife clattered to the ground just as the thought came to Sherlock, "I love you." There wasn't time to analyze it now, so Sherlock took the moment in its entirety, a span of maybe 10 seconds, from the girl's charge to the knife clatter, and tucked it away to look at again later. He bent to look at the knife, picked it up with a gloved hand, and noted the dried blood near the base of the blade. "Probably the murder weapon," he said. "Mira, was it?" "Don't worry. Given your age and familial situation, Lestrade will sympathize." "I didn't kill no one," she muttered, still struggling futilely against John's grip. "Bastard deserved it. I'd like to have killed him, but I didn't." "I know," Sherlock said, straightening and dropping the knife into an evidence bag. "Your sister did. And then she left you with a murder weapon, said it was for your protection, didn't she, and buggered off 2 days ago. Am I right?" "I..." Mira went still against the brick. "I ain't saying nothing." "Fine." Sherlock put the bagged knife into a pocket, stripped off his gloves, and fished out his phone. "I'll say it then. She left you here. She told you where she was going, a relative's house outside of London, I'm sure, and then she told you she would be back. She didn't say when, though. The question is, why didn't she take you with her?" "She's..." Mira began. "She went to... He didn't know me. She thought he'd be more likely to take us in if I weren't there at first." "That's what she told you, is it?" Sherlock hesitated, and then gentled his voice. It hadn't ever particularly hurt to deliver the facts of a case before, but for this case, this time, it did. "She isn't coming back for you, Mira. She intended for you to be convicted of this murder."
"No, she didn't!" Mira began to struggle again. "She's coming back!"
"Mira," John said, in his kindest physician's voice, "it's going to work. There's plenty of evidence placing you at the scene. Your prints are on the murder weapon found in your possession. The fact that you ran from us, that you're fighting me, that all counts against you in court. They can only be so lenient, Mira, even if they want to let you off. You will be convicted of this murder." People responded to John. Mira went mostly still once more, crying quietly against the brick. "We don't want you convicted," John went on, "but there's no way you'll be acquitted unless we can get to your sister."
"You could just let me go."
"We really can't," Sherlock cut in. "The police already know we've caught you. They're on their way. You're maybe 17. Small, scrappy, but untrained. There's no way we'd be believed if we said you'd overpowered us or escaped."
"I..."
Mira sniffled, visibly struggling to reassert control over herself.
"I don't want to say anything until I have a lawyer. That's how it works, isn't it? I don't have to talk if I don't want to."
"Indeed." Sherlock slipped his phone back into his pocket. "Lestrade's just around the corner." "Right," John said. He let up the pressure pinning Mira to the wall, letting her take a step back and turn. His grip on her wrist remained tight. "Let me see your face. Did I hurt you?" Mira flinched.
"Don't touch me."
"All right, all right. Sherlock, will Sally be with them? I think Mira should be handled by a female officer." "She'll be here." They both attended Mira Diaz's trial. They weren't witnesses, and in truth, no witnesses were necessary. Mira had refused to give up her sister, and on the advice of counsel, was making a plea for justified self-defense. John went out of sympathy, or kindness, as though the presence of the men who caught her could be kind. Sherlock went, because John wanted him to go. He sat quietly in the gallery, and refrained from fidgeting, making loud comments, insulting the intelligence of the prosecution, or escaping into his mind palace. It was short, as trials go. The testimony was heard, the evidence examined, and the verdict delivered in under a day. She refused to testify, and in the end, inevitably, she was found guilty. She looked up at them as she was being led out, surprised to see them. But then she flashed a half-smile and shrugged. Her eyes were still sad.
See, John said later, I knew it was a good idea for us to go.
Sherlock only grunted, his attention fully focused on the dissection of a human hand in front of him. After a moment, he said,
Why would she do that?
What? John asked from across the sitting room.
More than a moment, then.
Mira Diaz. Why would she refuse to implicate her sister? It had every benefit and no drawbacks. John was quiet for a long time. Long enough that Sherlock raised his head to look at him across two rooms. Finally, he said,
Love can make you do things you normally wouldn't.
Sherlock scowled. That's not an answer.
It's not, John agreed with a sigh.
And it is. Wouldn't you...
I don't love you,
Sherlock insisted, panicked. It wasn't quite the right thing. It wasn't precisely the thought he'd meant to express, but it was as close as he could think of in a hurry.
Fine, John said, undeterred. If it were you, then. If you'd killed someone, and I could take the blame and get off on a light sentence, if doing that would save you from a much harsher sentence, I would do it.
No, Sherlock said. But John wouldn't stop talking.
I would do it even if someone were telling me that you'd left me behind, that you'd deliberately let me be arrested in your place.
No, Sherlock said. John raised his voice to make himself heard.
I would do that because I love you, and I believe in you, and because it's only logical for me to bear a small burden so you don't have to bear a larger one.
Stop it! Sherlock shouted, violently shoving his dissection tray across the table. Tendons went flying, skin fluttered, and bones clattered to the floor.
Stop saying that!
All right, John said. Volume returned to normal, hands up and open in front of him.
It's not going to happen, I know.
He stood up, laying his book aside, and advanced cautiously toward the kitchen. Sherlock pushed his chair back, but didn't stand. When John came close, Sherlock pulled him in by the waist and snugged his arms tight around John's hips, pressing his face into John's chest.
You're not allowed,
he began, and stopped.
You can't tell me what I'm not allowed to do, John said, but gently.
They both knew Sherlock already knew.
I don't want that, Sherlock insisted. I don't want you to. My burdens are mine. They shouldn't touch you. Ever.
Sherlock squeezed John tighter. My burdens have hurt you enough, he said quietly. John said nothing. Maybe he hadn't heard. That, Sherlock thought, was probably for the best. They stayed there, unmoving and silent, until the flat went dark.
I looked inside the summer house, it wasn't ever there. I tried the Thames at Maidenhead and Brighton's bracing air. I don't know what the blackbird sang or what the roses said, but it wasn't in the chicken run or underneath the bed.
Chapter 4. Will it knock on my door in the morning? Sherlock couldn't trust the second time that thought occurred to him, except that it was the second time and not the first. He was flat on his back, clutching the headboard with both hands, head craned uncomfortably up so that he could see John's mouth stretched around his cock. John was looking back up at him, and when their eyes met, his stretched lips twitched on one side, more felt than seen. A smirk, and Sherlock could see in his mind exactly how it would have looked and distorted. I love you, he thought, and swallowed it down. Declarations made mid-coitus were not to be taken seriously. Feelings experienced mid-coitus? Opinions seemed to be divided. Some people consider them the most honest and trustworthy feelings. Others call them a product of overactive hormones and nothing more. Sherlock dropped his head back and moaned. Later. He'd think about it. Later. The third time was a bit Pavlovian in nature, Sherlock thought. He was dissecting a finger, part of a replacement specimen for the hand he'd ruined after the Diaz trial, while John stood at the worktop slicing chicken for dinner. He peeled a tendon away and found the bone worn down, looked up to point it out to John just as John dropped the knife. A red line swelled on John's finger and he swore. Sherlock's eyes fixed on the blood as the knife clattered on the lino. No, he thought, I love you. All right, he said instead, getting up to fetch the first aid kit out from under the sink. I'll be fine, John said, reaching for the first aid kit. I'll do it, Sherlock said, and made John sit down while he cleaned and bandaged the minor wound. It was more than such a small cut needed, but John let him do it anyway. When he finished, he lifted John's hand to his mouth and pressed a soft kiss against the plaster. Thanks, John said, grinning. You didn't have to kiss it better. Sherlock raised an eyebrow. You, of all people, should know that kisses don't speed healing. In fact, oral bacteria can. John laughed, cutting him off. You deleted kissing it better. Sherlock scowled, and John laughed harder. Maybe it wasn't so Pavlovian. A switchblade on pavement sounds very different from a kitchen knife on lino, after all. By the fourth time, he was certain it wasn't just overactive hormones. He had John spread beneath him, shivering, skin flushed halfway down his chest. John's cock was leaking heavily. A small pool of precum gathered at his navel and dripped off the side of his belly. Sherlock wanted to bend down and suck it away, fill his mouth with the flavor of him, but he wasn't certain he could avoid touching John's cock if he did. It had only been 54 minutes, and John had allowed him 1 hour. He'd stopped crying out 36 minutes ago. Now he lay panting and whimpering, moaning quietly whenever Sherlock pressed particularly roughly against his prostate. Eyes closed, beaded all over with sweat, fingers clutching weakly at the sheets. He looked almost in pain. Exquisite, beautiful, and Sherlock worried. All right, he asked for the seventh time. John hummed, blinking up at Sherlock. His eyes seemed black in this light and unfocused. His mouth opened, but he seemed to have forgotten how to use it. His lips worked for a moment, and then he managed. Time? 4 more minutes, Sherlock said. Almost. Do you feel... John shook his head. If you... He managed, and then lapsed into a soft moan. Eyes fluttered close once more. I love you, Sherlock thought. And by now it was familiar, even if he still wasn't certain enough of its truth to say it out loud. John's whimpers began to inch upwards in pitch and volume. Sherlock glanced at the clock and then back down at John. John was as hard as he'd ever seen him, and he sounded like he was less than 3 minutes from coming, but he'd sounded like that before. Sherlock bent down and changed his angle, spread his fingers to rub on either side of John's prostate. John let out a wail, back, arching, and Sherlock gritted his teeth against the ache in his forearm and kept going. He kept his eyes on the clock, and the moment it ticked over to 1800, he let out his breath and slid his fingers from John. John's noises trailed away in a sigh as he went limp. Time's up, he mumbled. Time's up, Sherlock agreed. How do you want to come? Give me a few, John panted. Sherlock hummed agreement, sitting up to lap the pre-cum off of John's belly. Already he could see John's erection losing its strained overfullness. The stretched skin of the head was crumpling, wrinkling into itself. His cheek bumped John's frenium, and John jerked through his whole body. Okay? Sherlock asked. Okay, John confirmed, still panting. Can I have your mouth? It's yours, Sherlock said, before I could think any better of it. And then, to keep John from asking what he meant, he ducked his head down and sucked John in deep. It sounded a bit too much like I love you for Sherlock's comfort. I'm fine, Sherlock insisted. It's just, how? Stop it. It's just a little one. There's no such thing as a little concussion, John braced Sherlock's face in his hands, tilting his head up to make their eyes meet. As frequently as you manage to get yourself concussed, I have to take them seriously. Hold still. John let go of Sherlock's face and reached for his penlight. I, Sherlock said, and then remembered that he wasn't sure that he wasn't vocalizing that thought. Instead, he squinted at the light and said, am feeling somewhat unfiltered. Hold still, I said, John snapped, holding Sherlock's straw in one hand and shining the light into Sherlock's eyes with the other. It hurt. His thumb dug in a little too hard, and the light was too bright, and Sherlock just wanted to sleep. All right, John said, finally lowering the light. I want you to eat something, if you can. Feeling nauseous? Yes, Sherlock said, dropping his head forward to rest on John's shoulder. You're going to make me eat anyway, aren't you? I'm going to make you try, John confirmed gently. Just some tinned soup. Okay? Sherlock grunted an acknowledgement. John pushed him back gently, so that he was staying upright, independent of John's support. You take, he said, and hesitated, and then decided to blame it on the concussion. You take care of me. I do my best, John agreed, fussing with a tin opener. A blink later, or so it seemed, John was putting a bowl down in front of Sherlock. Don't fall asleep yet, he said. Eat a little. Sherlock ate. The soup was deliciously tasteless, and warm but not too hot. He fished out all the chunks and then drank a third of the leftover broth down in one long drink. All right, John said. That's enough. Go on into bed, and I'll be there in a minute. Okay? Precious John. Vital John. Necessary, John. Sherlock loved John, and only tenuous knowledge of his concussion kept him from saying so out loud. He stumbled into the bedroom and remembered to take his clothes off before burrowing into bed. The fifth time was a perfectly ordinary moment, a moment that had happened 1,000 times before. John holding out a mug of tea, and Sherlock wrapping both hands around it to warm his fingers, their skin brushing and their eyes meeting just for a moment. He could see it in John's eyes, the love that John held for him. He could see it now and recognize it, and it was utterly familiar. It was the way John had always looked at him. And it was the way he had always looked at John, too, with love. He was in love with John. And maybe he always had been. Sherlock came close, very close, to saying it the next morning, and for no reason. Just John, golden in the early morning sunlight, sleeping peacefully as he did approximately 82% of the time. His mouth hung open, a damp patch of drool on one cheek, forehead smoothed and ears falling away from his skin. He blinked as Sherlock watched, his breath speeding up. When he saw Sherlock, he smiled. Just the same smile Sherlock saw every morning. That warm, sleepy, soft smile John had smiled at him 100 times. 1,000. Sherlock had to kiss him then, to keep himself silent. The words welled up in his chest and throat, and he felt certain John could taste them in his mouth. Well, maybe John had always been able to taste them in his mouth.
Does it pull extraordinary faces? Is it usually sick on a swing? Does it spend all its time at the races or fiddling with pieces of string? Has it views of its own about money? Does it think patriotism's enough? Are its stories vulgar or funny? Tell me the truth about love.
Chapter 5. Will it stop when one wants to be quiet? So, the thought of love was occurring to Sherlock more frequently, in response to more ordinary stimuli. Sherlock tried it out, aloud for the first time. I love you. No. It wasn't quite right. It rang hollow in the empty flat, no ears but Sherlock's to settle in. Sherlock huffed a short, irritated breath and tried again. I love you, John. No, still wrong. Still too empty. I am in love with John Hamish Watson, former captain of the 5th Northumberland Fusiliers, he said. Too much. Too loaded down with irrelevancies. But they weren't irrelevant. It mattered what John's middle name was and what his rank had been and who he'd served with. And it mattered so much more what his smile looked like in the morning and what blood looked like dripping from his fingers and how he moved and twisted when he pinned a suspect to a wall. Something about this was wrong. What was he thinking wrong? Before he could make another try, the street door downstairs creaked open and then clicked shut. Sherlock sighed, flopped onto his back on the bed. Had time really gone so fast, or was John home early? He listened to John moving around downstairs, hanging his coat, flicking on the lights in the sitting room, looking into the kitchen and then into Sherlock's bedroom, coming out again, checking the coat rack where he'd find Sherlock's coat and scarf, his shoes on the floor. Come up, John, Sherlock thought. There's only one place left I could be. Come up. Sherlock! Worry. Sherlock rolled sideways to face the bedroom door, so that he could see the moment when worry gave way to affection. John's feet pounded up the steps, and, yes, there it was. Scanning eyes, thinned lips, tense and hard, all relaxing and softening and warming at the sight of Sherlock. What are you doing up here? John asked, coming to settle on the edge of the bed. Sherlock grunted, wriggled around until he could get his head on John's lap. He pressed his face into John's belly, feeling the way it gave, soft, layered over hard. He could just feel John's penis against his cheek, a barely there swell of flesh. I was worried, John murmured, combing his fingers through Sherlock's hair. Thought you weren't home at first, but your shoes were here. Thought maybe you'd been kidnapped. Sherlock huffed his disdain at the idea into John's shirt. Well, I am a bit drunk, John said, laughing. So, tell me, what are you doing up here? Sherlock pressed his nose into John's navel and inhaled deeply. John smelled like clean, like skin and sweat, like beer and other men. He smelled like the room. He smelled, just a bit, of Sherlock. John took it as an answer. I missed you, too. You could have come, you know. Another disdainful huff. It would have been warm and moist against John's skin, muffled, felt in the movement of the air and the rise and fall of Sherlock's back, more than heard. John lay back, his knees still hanging over the edge of the bed. I love you, Sherlock. You're drunk, Sherlock said. Still love you, John said. Loved you yesterday, and the day before, and the week before, and the year before. Love you now. And I'll love you tomorrow. And the day after. And the week after. And the year after, too. John sighed, a happy, warm sound accompanied by the scratching of his nails over Sherlock's scalp. I can't imagine not loving you. Even if I never say it back? Even if I'm never sure? John chuckled, his belly rippling with it. Sherlock pouted invisibly. He hadn't been joking. Even then, John said, sobering, I'm sure enough for both of us. I don't know how, Sherlock grumbled. That's okay, John said. I do. Eventually, Sherlock tired of listening to John falling asleep and went downstairs. John was only slightly tipsy, but he wasn't as young as he used to be. Sherlock filled a glass with water and found a blister pack of paracetamol and left both on the bedside table. John slept through Sherlock taking his shoes off and unbuttoning his shirt, but he woke up as Sherlock was trying to work his jeans off down his hips.
Sherlock, what are you doing?
You'll be more comfortable undressed, Sherlock said.
Hmm.
John wiggled around a bit, his trousers dragging down a little further, and then lifted his hips so Sherlock could pull them all the way off.
What time is it?
1:30.
I should go to bed.
You're in bed, John. Sherlock tugged at John's shoulders to make him sit up and shrug the shirt off.
Wrong bed. Well, will you sleep here with me?
John looked warm and inviting in his pants and vest, sleepy and affectionate, and maybe still a little drunk. Sherlock put the water into his hand and made sure it was held steady, and then took 2 paracetamol and pressed them against John's mouth. John swallowed them obediently, and then looked at Sherlock's fingers and bit playfully. Sherlock let him for a moment, and then asked,
"Are you going to sleep?"
John yawned.
I'll come downstairs.
Want to be closer to you.
That's where you'll be, right?
Yes.
Okay, then.
John drained the rest of the water in the glass and then, unexpectedly, leaned in and pressed his mouth to Sherlock's.
Love you too.
He was already at the door by the time Sherlock could react. John, I didn't.
You did,
John said, smiling at him from the top of the steps. But I won't say it that way again, if it makes you uncomfortable. Some hours later, he noticed the bedroom door was open. The hall between the kitchen and the bedroom was short, and he wasn't being quiet, muttering to himself and his carefully disassembled hand. He glanced at the clock, 3:20, and then got up and peeked into the bedroom. John was asleep, but lightly. Sherlock, standing in the doorway, cast a shadow over his face, which made him blink and murmur. The words were too quiet to hear, but the questioning inflection was clear enough.
I came to shut the door, Sherlock explained.
So you could sleep.
Mm-mm, John disagreed. Leave it open. Listening.
Sherlock hesitated. It seemed contrary to every irritated middle-of-the-night command John had ever shouted at him.
Should I be quieter?
Mm-mm, John repeated emphatically.
Listening. All right,
Sherlock said, dubious, and darted in to drop a kiss on John's hair.
Happy listening, I suppose.
But he found he was hesitant. Not shy. Sherlock Holmes had not been shy since he was 3 years old. But it felt strange now to talk to his dissection specimen, to ask it what he was about to find and tell it the names of all of its bones and tendons. Knowing John was listening made it different. After a frustrating 15 minutes of broken concentration, Sherlock put the hand back into its sealed container and back into the fridge, and then went and picked up his violin. Here was something he could do whether or not John was listening. He played softly, a slow, soaring melody in a major key, standing in the sitting room just outside the kitchen, near enough for the sound to carry clearly, distant enough that it wouldn't keep John awake. When he slipped into bed hours later, just before dawn, John was still smiling and didn't wake.
Your feelings when you meet it, I'm told you can't forget. I've sought it since I was a child, and I ain't found it yet. I'm getting on for 35, and still I do not know what kind of creature it can be that bothers people so.
Chapter 6. Looked as if he knew. John, Sherlock said, looking up from his website.
Uh-huh,
John muttered, tongue just peeking out from between his lips, tapping 2-fingered across his keyboard.
Not listening. Not while John is writing, Sherlock thought, and said, nothing, never mind. Okay,
John tucked his tongue back into his mouth and blinked at his screen. He wasn't even here. Sherlock smiled, stretched his legs across the width of the desk to tap his foot against John's. John's lips curled, but he didn't look up. Sherlock left his foot there, resting against John's, and went back to the website. This would keep, after all. Sherlock spent all of his time trying to find the perfect moment. This was an important announcement, and he wanted to say it, for the first time at least, at just the right time. The problem was that the perfect moment mustn't be a perfect moment. There were plenty of perfect moments, and no doubt Sherlock would find frequent use of them in the future for this particular declaration, but not the first time. Sherlock had already ruled out mid- and post-coitus perfect moments. He didn't want John to think he was simply overcome. Well, the perfect moment would be obvious when it came along. Sherlock disabled the attacker in front of him by gently dislocating the man's elbow. He howled in pain and dropped to the ground, appropriately useless. From across the room, John shouted, "Van Koon!" Sherlock's mind kicked up a notch. Van Koon, city boy from one of John's earlier cases, the Chinese smuggler, shot in the head, murder-labeled suicide, left-handed Dimmick was a... Oh! Sherlock rolled to the left. The split second he'd lost parsing John's message was nothing compared to the consequences had he allowed the second man to land his intended blow. As it was, the second attacker was now off balance, and Sherlock, from his crouched position beside him, was at the perfect height to kick the man's knee out sideways.
"John,"
Sherlock breathed, awed.
"Yes, what, Sherlock?"
John gritted out, his arm locked around the neck of the third attacker. Hadn't there been four of them? Where was the fourth? Ah, sneaking up behind John.
"Behind you!"
Sherlock put away what he'd been about to say in favor of the more relevant message. John dropped the man he'd been struggling with and targeted the man behind him. Sherlock made for John's abandoned target. They each incapacitated their targets at the same time and turned to each other, grinning and breathing hard.
"So,"
John said, "got any nicked handcuffs on you?" Sherlock laughed with the sheer joy of surviving.
Only zip ties, I'm afraid.
We'll have to make do." He had 20 in his pocket. 16 would be more than enough to secure four men. He tossed 10 to John and bent over the nearest man. "Not," he decided, "during a case." Nor immediately after a case, he thought, as his back hit the wall of 221B. The high of it was too much like the high of sex, as John was so ably demonstrating by sealing his mouth over Sherlock's and yanking at Sherlock's zip. Sherlock moaned into the kiss, gathering up handfuls of John's shirt only to let them go again when John fell to his knees, pulling Sherlock's trousers and pants down with him. He wasn't hard yet, but the sight of John yanking off Sherlock's right shoe with his right hand, Sherlock cooperated as well as he could, with three fingers of his left hand deep in his own mouth, had Sherlock well on the way to full erection.
"What?"
he managed, before John pulled his fingers out of his mouth to hoist Sherlock's free leg up and over his shoulder.
"I'm going to make you melt," John growled,
and then sucked Sherlock's cock down his throat and pressed a slicked finger against Sherlock's anus simultaneously. Sherlock groaned at the intrusion, pushing back against John's hand. The one leg with his foot still on the ground already felt rather liquidy. Sherlock had no idea how he was meant to stay vertical through this encounter. Thankfully, it didn't last very long. John pinned Sherlock's arm to the wall with his free hand, and that supported some of Sherlock's weight. John's shoulder was stable enough that Sherlock was able to use it for balance. Sherlock squirmed, and John led him, matching his rhythm stroke for stroke, and not complaining when Sherlock pushed too far back into his throat. There didn't seem to be a too far back. John's persistent unaffectedness had Sherlock testing boundaries he'd once believed sacrosanct, until he was pressing his entire length into John's mouth and coming right down John's throat. John swallowed around him, milking every drop. His fingers slid free of Sherlock's body, and then he was cradling Sherlock's hips in both hands, easing him gently to the floor, letting his cock slide free with a slight pop. Sherlock said, articulately. John smirked and leaned over to kiss him. "You give fantastic head," Sherlock said.
If he'd wanted to say anything else, it was too late. There was no room in his skull for anything but John's incredible mouth. Sherlock, what have you done with the salt? Sherlock said nothing. No point. John would either use it, at which point he would find out, or he would bin it, at which point he would find the packaging and unbin it. Pedestrian. Boring. Sherlock, it's pink, John insisted, coming out of the kitchen with a blue glass shaker in his hand. Look, you can see it looks purple through the glass. I shook some out into my hand, and it is definitely pink. Sherlock blinked once, slowly. John expected a response from him. Sherlock drug up a yes from the deepest recesses of his mind palace. Why is the salt pink? Himalayan, Sherlock answered. Go away. Boring. Sherlock, John began, but shut himself up with an obvious effort. Just as well. Sherlock didn't feel like listening to him whinge today. Is it safe? He demanded flatly. It's fine, Sherlock mumbled, and rolled to put his back to the room. He was being petty, even cruel, and he knew it. He wanted to stop, maybe even to say what he'd been trying to say to John, but at this point, John would probably take it the wrong way. A ploy for forgiveness, perhaps. The thought made Sherlock's mood even darker. Definitely not, now. John took himself out of the room, leaving Sherlock alone to sink into the bad mood, which Sherlock did with reckless enthusiasm. He worked himself into an angry froth over John's departure, his cruel abandonment, when John came back. Budge up a little, John said, nudging Sherlock's shoulder. I want to watch telly. Sherlock growled under his breath and didn't move. All right, then. Have it your way, John said. There was the clink of ceramic against wood, and then John's hands under Sherlock's shoulders. He hefted Sherlock up, sat down where his head had been, and lowered Sherlock back down. His jeans were soft against Sherlock's cheek, and his thigh was warm even through the denim. Sherlock pressed his face into the crease of John's hip and refused to be happy that he was there. John's hand settled into his hair, alternately ruffling up and smoothing down the curls. He turned his head to look up at John, whose eyes were still on the telly, but whose attention was on Sherlock. Now it would be... He wasn't angry, now. Another was John, and the words were right there. He opened his mouth and shut it again. And just as he decided that, yes, now was the time... I love you, Sherlock, John said, under the babble of the television. Sherlock shut his mouth and nodded against John's thigh. He wouldn't simply echo John's pronouncement. John deserved to know that it was Sherlock's idea. Sherlock would only say it when there was no chance John might feel coercive. They spent the rest of the evening that way, in peaceful quiet. Sherlock focused on the sensation of John's fingers in his hair to the exclusion of all else, and the time passed so quickly that he was startled by the darkness in the flat, when John leaned over him to press a kiss against his temple.
I'm for bed now, Sherlock, he murmured.
Coming. Not tonight, Sherlock answered. He curled up to let John stand, and then nuzzled into the warm space left behind. All right, John bent once more, and this time the kiss he dropped landed on Sherlock's mouth. I'll miss you. Good night. Good night, John. Sherlock held out for 2.5 hours before admitting that he missed John, too. Not intending to sleep, only intending to regain the focus he'd had while John was nearby, Sherlock crept into the bedroom and slid into bed. John rolled over half onto Sherlock, snuffling sleepily into Sherlock's shoulder. Three of us, he mumbled. There's space enough for three. Sherlock smiled indulgently. Are you dreaming, John?
Mm-mm.
John denied.
Who's the three of us, then? John pressed his face to Sherlock's shoulder.
I don't know. You're dreaming, John. The words welled up in Sherlock, intense and powerful. He swallowed them down. John wouldn't remember this in the morning. Go back to sleep, he said, instead. John agreed. Night. Now would be a good time. It was early evening. Their last case had wrapped up 2 days ago. The associated adrenaline had clearly dissipated, and the ennui had yet to overtake Sherlock. They were both awake and sober. They'd last had sex this morning, 10 hours ago, long enough for the lingering hormonal effects to have faded. Neither of them was deeply engrossed in anything. Sherlock had been cataloging and storing the data from the wrapped case. John was reading medical journals. Sherlock waited for John to set one aside, and then spoke before he started on the next one. John. John looked across at Sherlock, eyes warm. Already halfway to a smile, and all Sherlock had said was his name. Sherlock? Sherlock is actually a girl's name.
What?
I mean, I love you. There. The full smile blossomed over John's face, smoothing some wrinkles and sharpening others, folding around his eyes. I love you, too. Sherlock smiled back. He hadn't been thinking about that. Hadn't been thinking about the obvious answer John would, of course, give. Hadn't anticipated the slow melting warmth of having his feelings returned, explicitly, verbally. John told him often enough. They both knew he loved Sherlock. And, of course, since John had always been sure of Sherlock's love, once Sherlock had become sure, they both knew that Sherlock loved John. But it was different, undefinably, for having been said out loud. Acknowledged in daylight, in words. We both love each other, and we both know it. Tea, Sherlock said. Love some, John said, and then leveled a playful glare at Sherlock. Let me guess. I'll take some if you're making it. Sherlock smiled, steepling his fingers in front of his face. You know me so well. Yes, well, John smirked at him and picked up the next journal. I'd take some tea, if you're making it. Sherlock stared. He'd never been so undignified as to gape. And John just grinned down at his journal, fully as though he didn't care whether or not there was tea. John? You're awful, Sherlock said, and went to go make the tea.
When it comes, will it come without warning? Just as I'm picking my nose. Will it knock on the door in the morning? Or